So the title of the talk is a little bit chauvinistic because I called it Integrating Databases with Cocoon, and actually I'm only talking about relational databases here. I'm not going to talk about object-oriented databases or even XML databases. I will give you an overview of the menu of possibilities to interact with databases that are provided by Cocoon, and this is basically plain JDBC. I will not talk about J2EE, which is the natural choice as well. You can use container metric persistence with Cocoon. There's nothing to, there are no obstacles to do that. There is a logic sheet called ESQL for database connectivity. We have a transformer. We have database actions, and then you can also use something like a persistence layer in object relational bridge. This is perhaps the future. Well, who am I? I've been with the Darmstadt Technical University for the last 6 years doing database labs with students. They were taught to design a database application and write a web front end, and we were using Cocoon for the last 3 years. I'm committed with Cocoon and mainly working with ESQL together with Thorsten Kurt and the database actions. The input modules have their origin actually with the database actions, so we might touch them as well. Well, prerequisites are, I think you all know about databases. You should know about a little bit about Cocoon. Stefano did a great job to introduce it, so you know about sitemap and stuff. Right. How does Cocoon connect to databases? If you want to use the features Cocoon provides, you can use the Evelyn connection tools. It's not enough. It's a must for some things like the database actions, but there's no need to. You basically have to have your database JDBC driver somewhere in your class path. I prefer to put it into the lib directory of the weapons, subdirectory of Cocoon. If you want to use connection tools, you need to add your driver to the web XML so it loads and registers with the driver manager, and you can configure your connection to the database in the Cocoon XCOM. You need to restart Cocoon, obviously, so files are reread, and this is usable from, for example, ESQL flow, SQL transform action. So, well, copy it to the weapons directory, add your driver to the web XML, set up your data source, which is basically what you know from you know, JDBC programming. You got database URL, you got username, password, stuff. You can connect, you can configure how many connections are in the pool, what's the max size limit, and stuff. We have different data sources for different connections. We have a J2EE data source. We have a special data source for informatics databases. We have special options for Oracle databases. To know the details, when to use what are the options, have a look at the Avalon Excalibur data source and stuff, where they have documents for all that. If you're using ESQL, for example, you don't need to use a connection call, you can use a dynamic connection every time you process a page. Now, with Cocoon 2.1, we have a new version of the Excalibur data source library, which is more friendly to the new JDBC version. As you might or might not know, JDBC 1.4 introduced JDBC version 3 in a not really compatible way with the JDBC 2. They just replaced it. There's no way to switch between those. And the database code was based on the version 2, and they had a separate version of the library for version 3. And if you mix those versions, there were some methods that were not implemented or not available or something. So with version 2.0 of Cocoon, you have all those trouble like could not connect to database, there's no class grounds and stuff. So if you're still using 2.0, never mix a Cocoon build for JDK 1.4 with running on a lower version of this. So anyway, with 2.1 this should all be solved, but if you have connection problems, look into your core.log, increase the log level to debug, look for messages like no suitable driver, look at the beginning of the log, because when Cocoon starts up, the data sources are connected. That's where the error message is, where you can't find the driver, where it can't connect because of wrong password or something. If you access the page, it just tells you can't get connection from the pool, which is not the error message, not the real. So have to look at the beginning of the file, really. There are some error messages which are okay. The connection pools pull the database every 10 seconds or something, that may fail, but no problem. So for the rest of the presentation, I'd like to use three tables, groups and users that are connected by end-to-end relationships, so we have a connecting table. The table names are not good for real life use because some database systems like PostgreSQL have reserved words for users, for example, so you can't run those examples on PostgreSQL, which is one of the points. If you have to look at the Cocoon samples, they use the same table name, so if you port it to PostgreSQL, you might have a problem with that. Now, to use JDBC, there's not much to do other than to have your driver in the class tab. If you want to use the LLM connection tools, you've got to use it from an LLM component, which basically means you're writing a code, for example, on an XSP, or you're implementing something like a composable serviceable interface in LLM to get a reference to the component manager, get a reference to the data source selector, obtain your connection from the data source selected, do your JDBC calls, release everything, and you're done. In the future, Cocoon might use Fortress, which deprecates selectors, so it gets a little bit easier. What's the good stuff about using plain JDBC with Cocoon? Well, you get everything under your control, but you're not leveraging anything of the framework of this place. Everything that needs to be done manually, and you should really do Avalanche components to access the connection pools, which is nice in my opinion. Now, probably the first thing you will encounter when doing databases with Cocoon is probably doing XSP, looking for a logic sheet, ESQL is there to help you. XSP's compiled generators, and ESQL is only a thin layer on top of JDBC. For advanced users, I would say you need to know JDBC to really use ESQL. Well, there's two guys I sent this presentation before to give comments, Paul Secret and Antonio Galado. They said, oh no, our experience is we don't need JDBC knowledge to do this. Granted, if you just do a select and print out the columns, it's no problem at all not to know JDBC. The good thing is you can use all the features of DBMS offers, and for me the typical use case of ESQL is doing select. So this is an example of how to do it. You get all these dark stuff, this is the ESQL stuff, you get connections, you reference the pool. You can use prepared statements, insert something like request parameters from another logic sheet and stuff, and the result will be something like this. So once your generator runs, this is the result. You see the markup, the ordered list is somewhere down here, and printed in red, and it's evaluated as the result that is traversed. Talking about inserting values to ESGL, I'd like to warn you about the SQL injection problem. Never trust your users, never trust input from the client side without validation. Use of prepared statements is one of the defense lines you have, so you should use it. Dynamic elements in ESGL, you can have a dynamic connection, you can have a dynamic query, beware of the injection. You can have dynamic parameters in a prepared statement. You can page through your result set, display 10 rows, display the next 10 with the second invocation of your generator. You have direct access to the result set if you need. You have direct access to the result set metadata. You have conditional blocks on your page where you have arrows like here below. There's a special block that's only evaluated if you have no results, so no rows returned from the SQL statement. You can do grouping, like you have a query where you have users and groups that this user participates in. You don't want to print user group 1, user group 2. You want to do user group 1, group 2. And you can do this with ESQL grouping, for example. So one thing with ESQL, you have things like stored procedures, you can use grouping, you can have nested queries, you can have page through your result set, you can insert XML from attribute values, you can have arbitrary SQL statements. It's fast, it's really fast, it compiles to Java bytecode, uses only a thin layer on top of JDBC, there's low overhead, and it's really good on fast prototyping in my opinion. You can even use it for writing actions. We have this feature of XSP actions, so you can write your actions using the XSP paradigm. The downside is you need some JDBC knowledge. There's no real abstraction layer. It's really, really thin. And in my opinion, a very bad point about ESGL is you have different views from the same file. Like I showed you, you have an error result or a no result, which is usually a completely different page. It should be, because perhaps different people are working on it. And you have all that in one file. That mixes concerns, in my opinion. Well, some say usage of XSP is a problem as well. You definitely have a size limit if you do a lot of processing in your XSP, the compiled size might not exceed 64k for the generate method. If you want to use ESGL, hide your ESGL in a custom logic sheet. Don't modify the database. Just do selects. Don't do updates. In my opinion, that's not good. You should use column numbers instead of column names. It's a little bit faster, because otherwise you have the lookup. JDBC uses column numbers internally. Use ESGL for complex queries or simple applications, or just prototyping. Well, if you don't like XSP, you might want to go to the SQL Transformer, which happens somewhere down the line in your pipeline. It's very similar to ESGL, but it has a different syntax, unfortunately. There's no compilation involved, so it's a little bit slower, not much, but it is. And you can have more dynamic queries, like you obtain a query from an X-input, for example, get the query from completely different sources and read from the database. So how does it look like? You see the pages a lot simpler. You have only the SQL query. You can also do substituting of values, insert values from request parameters, but that happens in the sitemap, really. This is the sitemap snippet to call the SQL transformer, you indicate the connection pool, you indicate additional values, and the result looks like this. You always get this row set tags with the name of the attributes. So you definitely need processing afterwards to present the result. What I like about the transformer is it too can access stored procedures, it too can use nesting of queries, you can use it to update, invert, delete, whatever. Again, I wouldn't advise it because you don't have a way to react on failure with the SQL transformer. It inverts an error tag containing the error message, but you need to act on that somewhere down in your pipeline, which I don't like. It does automatic insertion of XML if your attribute contains XML markup. You can even leverage caching if the SQL transformer is very late in your pipeline, so you can cache up to the point where the dynamic part of your pipeline begins, so that may be useful as well. And the separation is a little bit better than with XP, I believe. Downside is you can't react on failures. You need to use some XSLT or other styling afterwards to prevent the result. You can't do any computations like calculate an interest rate or something before storing the data. The escaping of parameters is very limited. It searches for quotes and replaces the quotes with something different. I think it's safe, but well, you never know. Prepared state parameters are like better. Now, my advice on transformer is a lot similar than ESQL. Use it for mostly select. Don't modify the database. Use to display data or simple applications. Said all the time that I don't like to modify the database in the generator. I like to do it somewhere during the pipeline setup. Actions were the first thing that were executed during the pipeline setup. So we have two flavors of database actions. We have those I call the original ones and those contained in the modular package below the actions package. The modular ones use input modules to access data, so they can pull data from the request parameter, from request attributes, from the session, from the authentication framework, from whatever. You can use modules to pull data from a lot of sources. They've really got their own life now, can use input modules in the sitemap. It's quite funny, the users you have here. The big pro of actions is you have this if behavior. If the action succeeds, you go down this part of the pipeline. If it fails, you go down the other route. So you have separate files for failure and for success. You have the metadata in a separate file. You don't have to write your own SQL. This is done by the actions. They use input modules, I already said that. You can even use auto-increment features from your database. There are a lot of supported databases like PostgreSQL, MySQL stuff. Where you don't have to generate the keys. How does it look like? Very simple. It's in your sitemap, you declare the action and you just say act, do something with the following tables. And if it's successful, go down this one, this route, or otherwise redirect, in this case, to another one. You have the metadata, which is just straightforward. You have the tables, you have the key values, the keys for the values, data types, and it's an auto-grid command. You have these groups of tables, these table sets, where you can list multiple tables and work on multiple tables in your data. This is actually the binding of the incoming data to the database. We have advanced usages here where you can use those input modules, have different data sources for the values to enter into the database. You can have multiple rows at one time, like I have one user and four groups. I want to insert this at the same time as the insertion of the user will set a request attribute, which is like org, Apache, Cocoon, something, and I will read it for insertion into the groups table. Right. You can use, what's advanced usage of actions? You have the results available right in your sitemap if the action is successful. You can store the results anywhere using output modules, like write directly to the session, write to request attributes, whatever. You can pull the data from different sources. Let's say that. So, to sum it up, you have an extra file for your metadata, which is good. You have separation here. You have different pages for different views. Again, separation of concern, failure, or success. You have automatic SQL. You don't have to write single line of SQL. You can update, delete, select, or even write arbitrary SQL if you really like to. You can act on multiple rows and tables. You can use auto increments. You have relatively fast prototyping. You have automatic conversion of data types. You can use object relational data types like set or row types. The downside is you have an extra file for your metadata. You have added complexity in your sitemap, and this is really a bad point if you have to check several conditions like the user already exists, or there's a processing error, or whatever, and then your sitemap really fills up, and that's quite complex. Your transactions can only span one operation, like all the adds, all the inserts, or all the deletes. You cannot delete and add in one transaction, really. You cannot access stored procedures, and you need to use a connection pool. Having said all that, those database actions are really a proven solution to the next, I have advice as well. Use it to modify the database, and use ESQL or the transformer for the rest. Well, the database actions are really only a proven solution to this object relational bridges. You have a very similar concept here. You have a metadata file as well, and the SQL is generated for you by the persistence layer. You may know this already from container managed persistence in J2EE, and there are a lot of open source bridges that are available. We have one now in the ASF framework, that's the OJB in the database project of Apache. There's Hibernate recently joined with the JBoss. There's Kafka, which as well does XMLization of Java beans, which is quite nice as well. And there are more. So, how does it work? You have no integration with Avalon connection tools yet. You have to configure it in a different place, not the Kunix Xcons, which some might say is good because the Xcons is already complex and you don't want to touch it. Really. The metadata file can be generated for you by using tools like XDocWeb or Druid. Druid reads the database metadata from the database connection and writes it to an XML file. While XDocWeb uses JavaDoc, special JavaDoc comments in your code and creates the mapping file from that. You see, there's one difference to the actions. You always need a Java class that contains your data, which is the portal to your database. And you need to invert the data somehow during the transformation process. For example, using the custom transformer, using the JX template transformer. We'll see more of that in Sylvain's presentation, I believe. You may even use ISSP, which I won't advise for obvious reasons. And a big pro of using a persistence layer is you can use the flow script as glue and access and invoke all the methods on the persistence layer, like obtain your objects and store them back to the database. How does it work? You get your connections somehow from the persistence manager, for example. You look up your object using some object query language, which is a derivative of SQL usually, but there's no real standard for that, really. Or you can create an object and just work with the object and say, write it back to the database and transaction. That's it. So with samples, how does it look like? Well, for the OJB example, this is a mapping file, an example mapping file. Looks a little similar to the database actions, really. You can really come up with some XSLT to transform those two. You can use X.lit with the following javadoc tags that would generate the same mapping file, actually. Or, no, I've no Druid example here. Problem flow is as simple as to say persistence broker factory, get me a persistence broker, create a new user, modify the user, just write it back, and that's it. One last minute addition, we have an OJB blog down CVS. They have examples for integrating OJB with Flow and Woody, so it's worthwhile to look at that. And they have Avalonized the persistence broker of OJB, so you can obtain it through the usual Avalon methods like lookup. So, what do I like about bridges? They are really powerful and they integrate well with Woody and Flow. You don't have to write in SQL. It's an easy migration if you're already using database actions to go to a bridge. It's even usable outside Cocoon, so you can base your project on the same technology you're used to. So you can build some standalone Java applications using the very same mapping files, using the very same fashion. And if you're using, for example, the Apple flow controller, you can even reuse that. You don't have to care about your metadata manually, you just obtain it through Druid or even generated through the javadoc tag. Problem is you always need a bean or a java tag to be a portal to your database. Yeah, if you don't want to do that, if you don't want to start your Java compiler, you're probably better off using the actions. The OQL is not as standard as the SQL, but you all know SQL. It's a nice standard, but nobody implements it fully, so it's not really a problem, and slightly more complex. So, I already talked about Flow a little bit. You can, of course, use this persistence layer from Flow. You can call any Java code you like. You can program your own JDBC calls in Flow. That's the nice thing about JavaScript. You could call the actions, if you like, through the legacy JS library, which doesn't exist yet. And there's even a database library for JavaScript in Cocoon, currently located in the pedestal sample. It's called database.js, and it automatically gets a connection from the pool, and you have some convenience methods to just do an update or a query. So, round up, when are the things executed? If you have the setup, which allows to do the database modification, and you have the generation and transformation phase, which happens at the same time, really. You have flow execute during the pipeline setup, so you can have different pipelines for different outcomes. You can use the bridge whenever you like, depending on how you access the bridge from flow or from the transformer or generator even. You have actions or XP actions using ESPL as well during the setup, and you have XP and SQL transformer during the pipeline execution. I would advise to only select statements during the pipeline execution. So Cocoon provides different solutions for different needs in the realm of database connectivity. And I would strongly advise you to keep your pages simple and stay away from complex logic on the pages. You should use actions and ESPL and simple HTML forms for more straightforward projects that you know you won't touch anymore, won't need to maintain a long time. They shouldn't have a complex flow and should be mainly display applications. If you have more needs, you should use flow, relational bridge, and a forms framework like the Woody, which is really cool for complex applications and long-time maintainable projects. So, yeah, I already did it about last minute edition. Resources to check the wiki, check the Cocoon site, check the LGB site, really. Now, questions? Okay, it was overwhelming. Yeah.
How far is the
right. We don't do any database caching in Cocoon. You might get some caching from the persistence frameworks that interact with some cache invalidation protocols. We don't really do database caching. What you can do is you can generate your page and prevent Cocoon from dynamically re-instantiating all the stuff, re-posing the SQL query or regenerating the file for a period of time. Let's say cache this for 10 seconds and every 10 seconds you get a new version of this file if you get a request. That's the only possibility I see for caching as well.
When you use a feature in ESPL, does it fetch all results at the same time and then fetch 10 by 10 or are they fetched 10 by 10 from the database?
Paging in ESPL is a little bit difficult to answer this question because it really depends on the driver, on the driver capabilities. Some drivers, if you say you want to access rows 20 to 30, there are some drivers that can't skip the first 20 rows, so you need to read all the first 20 and the next 10 as well. But some drivers have the ability to do that, and wherever we know it, we have a special case for that database or this database driver to only fetch the rows that are requested.